With less than a week left in this decade, we're going to look back now at some of the most important scientific events of the 2010s. The first clear image of a black hole, a revolutionary method for modifying genes, and more proof that a theory Albert Einstein proposed more than a century ago is correct. NPR science correspondent Joe Palca joins us now. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing well. So let's start with Einstein and the theory of general relativity. What happened in this last decade to prove that it was correct?
Well, there's been several things that have proved him correct over the years, but this last decade was really cool because one of his predictions was when two giant objects collided, they would put out these things called gravitational waves. And Jeremy, this is why I'm a science correspondent, because I get to say ripples in space-time. Mm-hmm. That's what these gravitational waves are. And there's an instrument here in the United States called LIGO,
yes,
which was built to detect these. And for many years, it wasn't able to because they weren't sensitive enough. And Einstein thought these gravitational waves would never be detected. But when they upgraded the instrument in 2015 and some short time after they turned it on, they saw a signal which exactly matched what they were expecting to see when two black holes collided. And that's what they think they saw.
And gravitational waves, LIGO, that won a Nobel Prize in this last decade.
Yep. Once it was found, everybody said, yep, that's a Nobel Prize.
Okay. Well, one of the other science stories that captured people's interest in the past decade was the total solar eclipse that swept across the United States in 2017. Here's how a crowd in Oregon reacted to the phenomenon as it was happening.
This is so totally creepy.
Oh my God, the sun!
So, Joe, not the first solar eclipse ever, not the last, but pretty significant still.
Well, yeah, I mean, people got really fascinated by just the physical phenomenon. And I have to say, I was in Chile this year for a similar event, and it was happening in Chile. There was eclipse fever. There are some things that scientists like to study when the moon passes in front of the sun, and you can study the outer atmosphere of the solar corona, it's called. But mostly it's the public imagination that was captured by this event.
I remember that I was in probably the worst place in the United States to view that eclipse, which was at Acadia National Park in Maine, which was very far away. But it was still cool because I was in a restaurant and everybody in the restaurant came and borrowed the same glasses so that they could look at the solar eclipse as it was happening.
Yeah, well, I have to tell you, Jeremy, there's a difference between a partial solar eclipse and a total solar eclipse. Mm-hmm. Once you see the total solar eclipse, you know what they're talking about,
yeah,
because it is a really odd phenomenon when the lights go down and it's like you're sitting in a theater waiting for the show to begin.
And an eclipse was also important in proving Einstein's theory, right?
That was another thing that eclipses did in 1919, so going back 100 years. Einstein's theory of relativity suggested that the sun would bend light coming from a distant star. But there was no way to see stars that were close to the sun because the sun's too bright, except when there's an eclipse. So they measured these bright stars that were right near the sun when the eclipse took place, and they were able to see them for a few seconds, measure their position accurately, and then compare that to where a star chart said they were supposed to be. And sure enough, the bending of the light exactly fit what Einstein predicted from his theory.
Okay, other news from the solar system, where scientists discovered the first known interstellar object to visit our solar system. Tell us more about that.
Well, this was actually discovered after it had already come in and was jetting away. It was called Oumuamua. I think I said that right. And it's just a rock that came from out there. And nobody's really sure where it came from, or they can probably plot its trajectory to see where it's going. But it just shows that there are things floating around in space that we haven't seen. Well, this one we happened to spot. And in fact, there was another one just spotted this year, which was a comet. The comet being a ball of dust and ice. And so, Jeremy, you want to wear a hard hat when you're out, looking around in the solar system.
Yep. We also got to see the first image of a black hole this year.
Yeah, now that was also interesting. It took a group of telescopes all across the planet to all point at this one black hole in a galaxy 55 million light years from Earth. And by all pointing at the same time in the same spot in the same region with this distributed network of telescopes, they were actually able to see this round blackness, which was, of course, the black hole. And around it, you can see the light from stars and other bright objects that are being pulled into it. So it's a pretty amazing picture.
Okay, Joe, back here on Earth, this decade marked the end of an era in the American space program.
All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff, the final liftoff of Atlantis on the shoulders of the space shuttle. America will continue the dream.
So NASA ended the space shuttle program. What did we gain from this program, and why did they decide to end it?
Well, we gained a space station, essentially. I mean, that was the primary reason that the space shuttle program existed. It was the only rocket in our fleet, essentially, that was strong enough to carry the bits of the space station up into space. They ended it because it was very expensive, and the space station was largely built, and there seemed like there would be other ways of getting astronauts into space that would be less expensive. It wasn't supposed to take this long for the United States to come up with an alternate method. So for the last intervening 8 years or so, we've been relying on the Russians to carry our contribution, our astronauts, up to the space station. Of course, they carry their cosmonauts and they bring them back. But there are some commercial projects that are supposed to maybe next year, maybe the year after, that will be carrying astronauts into space. That's the plan.
Okay. Well, we have to talk about some other areas of science, because we're talking about the biggest science stories of the decade. And in biology, scientists in Germany did something this past decade that 2 decades ago would have been more like science fiction. What was it?
Yeah, well, this one really blows me away. It was the ability to do a complete genome sequence. That's being able to log all the DNA base pairs of a Neanderthal. Now, remember, Neanderthals are extinct. So this was data that was taken from bones and teeth from individuals that haven't been alive for tens of thousands of years. So it's just such an amazing tour de force that you can actually get DNA from these remnants, many cases fossilized remnants, and still have it coherent enough to make its measurement. And not only did they get the Neanderthals, they got something called the Denisovans, which was a species, a whole civilization that was only known by a tiny pinky bone about a decade ago. They found a few more bones since. But the idea that this genetic sequence tells you you're talking about a whole new civilization, that's pretty amazing.
And speaking of genetics, this past decade brought us CRISPR, this gene-modifying tool, which was monumental.
Right. You know, every once in a while, something comes along in biology that just changes the game. And CRISPR did that. It allowed scientists to make changes in living cells. They think of it like a DNA editor, essentially. Of course, there were some controversial uses of this technology. Somebody did this in embryos, and there were children born in China that were edited using CRISPR. That part of the technology is a bit controversial, but there's a lot of other uses of the technology, not just in medicine, but in biology writ large, that is giving scientists an entirely new way to look at the biological world.
Now, Joe, we obviously can't get to everything in a 10-minute segment here, but what else sort of stands out to you as some of the biggest science stories of the decade?
Well, I mean, of course, there was this discovery of the Higgs boson, which is a particle that helps explain why things have mass. There was a much better understanding of how global warming was affecting storms on Earth. And in the last decade, we sent a probe that flew past Pluto. Nobody knew what Pluto looked like, and now we have a pretty good picture of it. So, you know, there's a lot of things that we didn't talk about that we could have certainly put as candidates for the most important science stories of the last decade.
Well, and for the scientists who are listening, if they have other thoughts about big science stories, go to our website, hereandnow.org, and let us know. But Joe, what can we be looking forward to in the next decade? What are some of the big scientific breakthroughs on the horizon?
I really like that question because I can say quite honestly, I have no idea. I mean, if you look at it, Jeremy, the paper entitled A Programmable Dual RNA-Guided DNA Endonuclease and Adaptive Bacterial Immunity didn't catch my attention when it came out in 2012, but that's the CRISPR revolution.
Oh,
that
wow.
was the paper that started the whole thing. So there may have been a paper this week or last month that will look completely innocuous to me, you know, and many other people, and it'll change the way we see the world. So I'm really happy to say I don't know what we're going to see, but we'll see something interesting, I'm sure.
That is NPR science correspondent Joe Palca. Joe, thanks so much and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.